Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The word temenos means sacred space in Greek. It denotes a place that is more than a mere physical location, an area of interest that is special and set apart. Starting in January of 2021, we will be establishing Temenos here, and this show will be part of it. It will be part of the Athenaeum, which is dedicated to the goddess Athena, and I'll be talking about that a little bit later tonight. But first, let me greet my guests. I was expecting three, and I have four. Greetings and welcome, Tony. I assume you're here. No, Apollonius, are you here?
I am here. Hello, Hercules.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And Jean-Louis, are you here?
Yes. How are you?
Okay, how are you? And we have two other people on the line. Would you care to announce yourselves? No? Okay. Apollonius, what area code are you calling from?
It would be from 865.
Okay, and Jean-Louis?
5071.
Okay, I see it. Okay, so I'll put the other two people in the quiet room for now.
Okay,
Jean-Louis, I'm very excited. You had an interview in Brazil. How did that go?
Good. There are a lot of people. I went to Brazil several times, and they are very, very interested by many things from our tradition, from paganism, because you know that they have candomblé, umbanda, and a lot of traditions close to shamanism. So this is very interesting, really.
That was fantastic. And do you speak Brazilian also, or?
I can understand without any issue, and I answer in English.
Oh, fantastic. And Apollonius, how are things with you? How is your book coming along?
It's coming along pretty well. At this stage, I'm mostly just doing some refinements. The translation always just takes sort of continual refinements. So, I read something and it maybe doesn't seem a little bit clear, or it just doesn't seem to be expressed very well. So I have to go back and look at the Greek again and try and, do something that's still faithful to the Greek, but maybe reads a little bit better in English as well. So it's kind of a never-ending process. The book is basically complete, and so I'm just polishing up the translation at this point. So I'll be submitting it to some publishers. Probably I'll wait till after the first of the year to do that. But that's pretty much where it is.
I'm looking forward to that because we're missing so much of his work in English. So it'll be great to have a translation of it. And what are your hopes for the work? How would you like it to be used optimally?
Well, it's a practical work. So, if people want to learn the technicalities of his philosophy, there's really just one book and a number of scholarly articles. So that's out there. But no, this is intended to be a practical book. So really how I would like it to be used is for people to read it and understand his philosophy and how it undergirds basically a polytheistic pagan theology in the Hellenic tradition, and then to practice it, because what has survived from his original book are fairly detailed descriptions of the rituals, even so far as the gestures to be used, the various sorts of declarations and invocations, the rather lengthy prayers, and the hymns. As I've mentioned, we have 27 hymns that he composed, each exactly 9 lines long, and these are for different purposes. There's one for each lunar month, there's one for each of the non-holidays within the week, And then there are several others as well. And so, this is a practical religion. You can do this, and I think I've been doing it, practicing it now for over a year, and I find it as a very modern, in many ways, version of an actual Neoplatonic polytheistic religion. So it's not Reconstructionism in the sense of going back to the very ancient traditions and modernizing them. And it's not, a wholly modern construction. As I say, a lot of people over the years have done Wicca with Greek god names. It's not that. It's been designed by somebody who was deeply immersed. Well, he was a Greek, obviously, and he was also deeply immersed in the Greek cultural and philosophical and religious traditions, and essentially designed a neo-pagan religion for his time, which was around 1400. But nevertheless, I think it worked quite well in our time. So my hope is that people will read it, and either as solitary practitioners or in small groups, they would practice this religion. And again, he gives ways to adapt it as well. So, he knows not everyone has the time to do all of the rituals that he describes, and so he gives recommendations for accommodating that. And so I think it's very practical in that sense. And so that's what I hope is. It's not a book of theoretical philosophy or theology particularly. It's a book of practices.
As was your book on Hypatia, and also your book on the oracles. You write very practical works.
Well, I think that's what we need. There's an enormous amount of scholarship, and which is very valuable, and I certainly make use of it. It's sometimes a little bit unclear how to take that and then to turn it into practice. And so that's really been my goal for a number of decades now, is to take the very hard and good work that scholars have done and turn it into something practical. And I have to say, one of the very nice things is there's a much more work in recent couple decades in Neoplatonism and in theurgy and in specifically in Pleithon's work. And so it's really just very, rewarding that there's been some very good scholarly work done that we can make use of. But my interests are primarily practical.
If I recall correctly, the YSCE, the ethnic Hellenic group in Greece, was also relying very heavily on Platon for their paganism.
That may be. I some of the rituals that I've seen from them were going back more to some of the ancient household practices and things, and even the ancient Athenian ritual catalog. So that's the stuff I was more familiar with. But I would be very happy if they were in fact putting some of Pleithon's practices into practice as well.
Jean-Louis, do you have anything
to say? May I ask something? Yeah, I have a question for you. If I well remember what I read in this book of Plato, the hymns are very, very long. These are long declamations and so on. And so I wonder if this is really useful for everyone, or this is too long to declaim, this is an old way to celebrate, or if you find a more focused way to practice, like more efficient, because when I read that, I am very excited by the hymns, I am very excited by the text and the genuity of that, but at the same time, on the practical side, sometimes this is very, very religious, more religious than practical or theurgic, or how you see that in the practice. you keep the full length of the ritual, or you how you see that in the practice?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question, and you're right. These kind of long invocations or addresses, if you recite them, you know, they take probably on the average something like 20 minutes to go through. One thing I've done, and this is something that's in my book, is to prepare an abbreviated version of each one of those. So, you know, something I've said is the pace of life in ancient Mystra, where Pleithone lived, must have been very different from our pace of life now, because he was really visualizing three, I would say, roughly hour-long services, a morning, an afternoon, and an evening service every day. And then on the holidays, even more extensive things. But he also says, he says this actually, and this is actually in some of the parts of his book that have not been published until relatively recently. He says, you know, you may not be able to do this. And he gives suggestions. He says, well, you can leave out the long addresses and just do the hymns. Or he says, you know, if you're lazy, leave out the hymns too. You know, the hymns are only 9 lines. They're pretty short, but you know, he basically says that you can leave this out. You know, and of course there's one other suggestion he makes is you could leave out the long addresses during the weekdays and only do them on special holidays, for example. So I think what he's provided is enough material that you could have you know, a fairly dedicated, if you were in a retreat, for example, or, you know, in a spiritual community, you could do these, like I say, you know, roughly 3 services a day. But also he recognizes that many people don't have that time or even that energy, and so they can do something more abbreviated. Now, that said, I would like to put in a word for these very long, 20-minute long addresses. And that is that if you think about them from a theurgical perspective, what you're trying to do is to make contact with a divinity. And these divinities are defined in terms of their philosophical attributes. And so by going through these attributes in these invocations, they're activating these ideas in our individual heads, which are then connecting them with the Platonic ideas that these gods represent. So, you know, his invocations have been described as didactic, you know, and they are, you know, they just kind of tell you all about the gods. But I think, you know, from a standpoint of Platonic prayer, they are also serving a function because they're attuning our minds with the divine structure. So from that sense, I would say, you know, it is worthwhile to periodically, you know, go through the long invocations and because they have an effect.
This is so true. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And Tony has joined us. Tony, do you have anything you'd like to add or ask about Polonius?
I'm actually really excited by the work that he's doing, and I'm even more excited by what he said about coming up with rituals, abbreviated rituals and longer rituals, because as Apollonius wisely pointed out, we don't always have the time to do ritual work, long ritual work 3 times a day. If you're a professional philosopher or living in a monastery or something, and that's all you're doing, that's fine. But the average person who's trying to hold down a job does not have that luxury. So I like the idea of having abbreviated version, but then you've also got longer versions for either special days, days when you feel that you need to have more of a connection with the divine, and also for retreats, when you have a large group of people and you want to facilitate them accessing the divine, you're going to have a much better shot at it with a long invocation than you will with a short invocation. And just an aside, I was going to say, I basically do the same sort of stuff that Bruce does. I go through translations and then pick up things that I can incorporate into my daily practice. However, I don't have Apollonius' skill set, so I can't actually do my own translations. I'm working with pre-existing translations, so I'm at the mercy of how good the translations were. And what has happened in the past is some people are very adept at translating things and they will capture the meaning, whereas others will deliberately obfuscate the meanings. Budge, for instance, was notorious for doing that, mistranslating Egyptian texts. So it's only when you had people like Faulkner coming along that we had a much better idea of what the Egyptians were trying to say. But I can't wait to actually hold Bruce's book in my hand and go through it and see what I can incorporate. I should say Apollonius. I shouldn't call him by his real name. Sorry about that. Slip up.
Okay. No problem. I'm looking forward to the book as well, and incorporating some of the techniques that you include into the things that I do, as I have with your other works as well, Apollonius. I know from like my, I'll use an example that everybody listening will be familiar with, like with the exercise. Like I exercise daily, and depending on the exercises that I do and the tools that I use, I'll get different effects. And after a while, I want to spend the least amount of time getting the greatest amount of benefit. So I'm continuously experimenting. How would using Plethon's works in terms of somebody's relationship with the gods, what would working with Plethon give us that we can't get from other systems that are currently available?
Well, I think, you know, he was very much trying to follow Plato's view of the ancient myths in that he mentions in the Republic and some other places, that you know, he said the poets tell lies about the gods, and so many of the philosophers were concerned about the traditional mythology of the gods, but for many people that was all they knew about them, that and the traditional rituals that had been handed down. And so what he provides is a philosophical understanding of the gods. You know, for example, Apollo is you know, we normally think of him about he's a far darter. He's you know, oversees the muses. He's connected with the arts, music, and all of these sorts of things. Well, in Plethon's system, fundamentally, Apollo is the idea of identity. He's the god that makes things be what they are. And Artemis, then his sister, she's the goddess of differences. She's the idea of difference. So you've got this complementary pole of identity and difference. And so really what he's done is analyze the whole realm of the gods in Platonic principles, and then identified them with the gods that they seem to match most closely. Now, you know, he says, well, why even use the old names of the gods? And he says, well, you can't relate very well to these abstract ideas. And so it's psychologically, it's easier to relate to, you know, Zeus and Apollo and Artemis and the other gods. But fundamentally, the understanding of them is coming from the Platonic philosophy. So in that sense, it's a theology that is not based primarily in ancient mythology. It's based primarily in Neoplatonic theology. So in that sense, it's very systematic. It's very organized. He claims that, you know, it's basically, you know, in a sense, if you analyze in any cultural context the gods, you'll come up with the same basic structure. And so, in that sense, it's true. And So in that sense, it gives us a deeper understanding of the gods than we might get from mythology or from some of the traditional practices. Which again, we're very much embedded in ancient Greek culture. So it's always difficult to separate practices that are in some sense connect with the essence of a god or goddess from those that were just culturally transmitted practices that had been done, you know, for hundreds or thousands of years, but, you know, could have been done in very different ways. So I would say that's what it gives us, is a more philosophically informed understanding of the gods and goddesses and the diamonds, I should say, as well. So and the planetary spirits. So all of them are part of Pluton's system.
I'm looking forward. In addition to the mythological and cultural understandings, I guess my strongest resonance is with the planetary spirits. So I'm looking forward to seeing what added dimensions the practice would add to my understanding.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, his, if I recall right, two or maybe it was three chapters about the celestial gods were destroyed. So, however, I have a chapter in the book, though, that attempts to reconstruct some of the parts that were destroyed. And in fact, I reconstruct, you know, again, based on other Neoplatonic sources, what I think he probably would have said about the planetary celestial gods, the planet, including the planetary spirits. He did say something about them in the surviving material, but the chapters that went into them in detail were unfortunately destroyed.
Well, I look forward to reading your reconstruction then.
Oh, thank you.
Jean-Louis.
A question to Apollonius. Do you think we can still find a few parts missing, like in Venice or somewhere in Italy by chance? Any chance to find a few parts remaining somewhere?
Well, there's always a chance, you know, and there were a few pages that were found in the British Museum in the 1960s, I believe, and quite valuable pages, I would say, they were there in a manuscript. They weren't lost. It's just nobody had really noticed them. And so there's always a chance that there's another copy that's a little bit more complete. But I think, you know, I would say the better chance is that some portions of his book may have been copied separately while he was still alive and before the main book was, the whole book was destroyed. And for instance, his chapter on fate seems to have circulated separately. The preface to the book and table of contents even may have circulated separately. And there's a couple other little parts that you know, he may have shown to somebody and let them make a copy. So there's always a possibility that, for instance, the chapters on the celestial gods, you know, there may be a copy somewhere in a library. And there are still problems with the manuscripts. These manuscripts are very difficult to read, and some of the people that copied them were kind of sloppy. So, you know, there's always a possibility of finding another copy that's clearer, or at least will help us to figure out some of the hard parts in the material that we've already got. But, you know, the description that Scholarius gives of how he destroyed the book, you know, he basically says he ripped out, you know, most of the book and most of the middle of the book, really, and saved parts at the beginning and the end because he thought those were the most damning in terms of proving that Platon was a pagan. But there are a couple chapters from the middle that survived. So, again, that suggests that there were some independent copies around. So, you know, I'm always hopeful. And you know, realistically, there's probably not much chance that we're going to get any significantly more from it. The parts that are missing are, for the most part, a large contiguous hunk. About the middle two thirds of the book is missing, and
you have to travel in Italy and investigate in Venice and Florence.
Well, yes, you know, I would love to do that, but I'll leave that to the experts. There is a new scholarly edition of the Greek text that's in preparation and being done by somebody in Greece, and I suspect that she has, you know, she has the knowledge to go looking for those manuscripts and going over them very carefully and looking at, you know, exactly what they say. So I will be waiting for that new edition to hopefully come out within the next couple of years. But, you know, again, I expect that there will be changes here and there, you know, little bits, paragraph missing here, a paragraph missing there, a fixed word here, a fixed word there. But I'm not getting my hopes up that there's going to be any huge amounts of new material. But if there is, I will celebrate. But that's a job for the scholars to do. I'm not qualified to, you know, I don't know if you've ever looked at you know, these, you know, high middle age manuscript, Greek manuscripts, but they're very hard to read, really. They're written in a very abbreviated sort of script. And, you know, it's difficult for a novice to make much sense out of them. I have a few times actually gone.
When I was in France, I worked on an ancient French manuscript from the Middle Age. And yes, this is difficult to read, but we can train. Yes.
Yes, we can certainly do it. We can train to do that. Yeah. And I have actually been desperate enough in a couple of cases where I just couldn't believe exactly what the text said. And I've got a photocopy of, you know, the British manuscript. And I looked at it, and as near as I could say it, in fact, it said what the published text says. So that's I think, the status of that, as far as I know, anyway.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Jean-Louis, the Fourier University is having lots of classes, which is awesome. Will that continue? Will there always be such a variety of classes running?
Yes, we are opening again the Tarot of the Rome Solis, the Divine Arcana of the Rome Solis. It was, the book was sold out, so we decided to switch to a course format with audio, video, and the tarot deck. And we are doing that in simultaneously in Portuguese, French, English. So it takes quite hard work, but yeah. This is interesting, and many people are asking about it. I was talking about it to the Brazilian public. So this is mainly what we are doing on my side. In the same time, we have members, companions of the Rome Solis from Ukraine that are building a course about shamanism, because they know very well the shamanism from Siberia and all this part of the world. So they are working on a course like that, and a workshop that will occur in January. We had to reschedule it. And two or three courses offered by a companion of the order in the U.S., one about the runes, the second one about Wicca, and another one about divinity from the Celtic tradition. So there are a few courses like that will occur, and we will have the opportunity and the pleasure to welcome Apollonius, that will present a lecture about his research on Plato in January. So a lot to do, but very exciting things.
Yes.
And in the same time, working as often as possible on the individual practices, because we have still coming. You know that I'm in charge of the Om Solis. So
yes.
In the same time, we are publishing online courses, public. And in the same time, we have groups sort of all the world that are focusing on specific aspects of the tradition. So for I give you an example. This year, the next year, one group of people will focus on the Chaldean oracles. So working on with documents coming from scholars all over the world. And in one year, we will have several things we use within the order, but several other things that will be made public and coming from this teamwork. So the time of these in December, usually this is what I am doing. That means organizing the different teams that will work on an Egyptian research on Chaldean oracles. And in 2022, I will share with you the results of that, the public part of the research.
Something to look forward to. Are you still doing the philosophy tours, Jean-Louis?
No. And it was a very good idea to not do it with the COVID and the pandemic and so on.
I was thinking
what we do instead, usually, when we have a session of the order, like we should have one in Greece next year. Usually we have a public part and we do a workshop in the public part and a visit explaining the history of the place and so on. So the next meeting of the order will be in Athens in Greece. So we will have a tour in Athens, not the same kind, like a pagan tour. But it will be on the city and always linked to the workshop, the public workshop or the session of the order.
Wow. Lots of exciting things. Tony, do you have anything you'd like to ask Jean-Louis?
While I was listening to Jean-Louis, I had like a little flashback to the Hellenistic world. Jean-Louis has an international operation and he has teams all over the world. And one of the reasons why philosophy was so absolutely incredible in the Hellenistic world was that people from all over the Hellenistic world came together, pulled their knowledge together. And the epicenter was Alexandria, of course, and they expressed themselves in Koine Greek. And in a way, Jean-Louis is doing much the same thing, because each team is a product of the culture that they grew up in. So each team can bring something slightly different to the table. So even though they're all working with Aurum Solis teachings, they're all going to be giving them a slightly different spin. And by bringing all those spins together, you wind up enriching the teachings as a whole. I think it's really exciting having a huge international operation like that. And I wish him every success with it.
Thank you. Yeah, what I like, and I can share that with you and with everyone listening today, is that we know that, but this is a reality. We cannot know everything. We cannot have all the knowledge. And when we have people like someone living in Greece, able to be in the country and to know the ancient language, the ancient Greek, to have someone who lives in, for example, in Germany and able to go to a museum to verify an artifact and to make the photos and everything. One is, for example, working in a laboratory for research on plants. So I cannot, and we cannot do the same. But if we have people of goodwill in an organization, even if we are not thousands in the Om Solis, we are a little more than hundreds all around. Really initiates maybe a little more. But we can, like that, with people of goodwill, create a kind of spiritual family, as we are doing today with this kind of show, and sharing our knowledge, building something, doing research with the expertise of everyone. And after that, as usual in the tradition, there are an esoteric part and there are an exoteric part. And the exoteric part is very useful for the public and for everyone. And I think that in the past it was the same. We have more than in a group than in one guy, even if the guy is initiated and the grandmaster of something. But the point is to have something that emerge and is alive. And what I like in this tradition we are talking about is to share this knowledge, to share this expertise for the good of everyone. I love this idea. And I don't like initiatory orders that are artifacts. They are like relics, and they are not moving an inch. So in this case, you cannot be alive. If you want to be alive, you have to create research to go forward and so on. This is what I like. And our conversation is exactly the same. We share things, and this sharing helps us to go forward.
Very powerfully said. Apollonius, do you have anything you'd like to ask Jean-Louis?
Well, I of course, will be looking forward to this, especially this work on the Chaldean oracles, which were so important for Neoplatonism, and in fact also very important for Pleithon too. He had a collection of 34, I believe, of the Chaldean oracles, which he considered the authentic ones, and he wrote a commentary on those, and it was part of the source for his philosophy as well. So I'll be very interested in seeing whatever of that work is out there when you're done. And I, you know, to follow up what Tony said too, I mean, it's really what you're doing is sounds very much like a virtual Alexandria. You know, it's we don't all have to go to Alexandria now to trade these ideas and get ideas and learn from each other kind of show the latest stuff we've been doing. We can do it virtually. And that's just really a much more powerful multiplier of progress than we've had for any time in the past, really. So it's really very, very exciting what you're doing.
Thank you.
Very true. Thank you so very much. And Tony, you recently wrote a new article for Patheos with heavenly and celestial associations. Would you care to share with us?
Sure. Basically, the article focused on the 14th of December, which was a very important date because that was the date that the Electoral College officially confirmed that Biden was going to be the new president of the United States and that it was all over for Donald Trump. But what I wanted to point out was that there were a lot of very interesting things happening on that date. So initially you had the Geminid meteor shower, which was basically over the 13th and the 14th of December, and its peak was at 2 a.m. in the morning of December. And as we know, whenever you had comets, meteors, and meteor showers appearing to the ancient Greeks and Romans, they believed that something good or something bad was about to happen. It meant that something really important was going to happen. So, and also, in parts of Chile and Argentina, there was a total solar eclipse.
Mm.
And so, and the thing is that until astronomers were able to predict the frequency of solar eclipses, they were thought of as as portents of doom as well. But once they're able to predict how they're happening, then obviously kind of the magic fell through for them. But because comets and meteors tend to be a little bit more random, then they're still thought of as portents. For a lot of New Agers, they believe that eclipses are a period of flux, and there can be change as a result of internal or external circumstances. So basically, there are times when sudden changes can occur in our lives. So in this case, you've got a change of presidency. Also, there's a comet called Comet Erasmus, which is currently visible. It's very faint, and that comes into our solar system every 2,000 years. And it was actually at its peak 25 days before the 14th of December. So it was at its closest point to the Earth on the 19th of November. And again, comets were often thought of as portents of doom. So the interesting thing about an electoral announcement is that it's doom for the person who's losing, but it's a very good thing for the person who's winning, because you always have a winner and a loser. So there was a new moon associated as well. Obviously, you have to have a new moon when there is a total solar eclipse, and new moons are associated with Hecate. And while Hecate is associated with witchcraft, the ancient Greeks would go to the crossroads and leave offerings of food for poor people and for animals. So it was also a time of charity. So I see that date indicating that things are going to improve for poor people. The other thing that's currently happening is that we're moving towards a great conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. And they're going to be at their closest encounter point in almost 400 years on the solstice, which will be on December the 21st. So for me, you've basically got a commingling of Jupiterian energies and Saturnine energies. So Jupiter is associated with expansiveness, plenty, knowledge, also legality, whereas Saturn, it can be associated with restriction or limitation. So in this case, it would apply to restricting the Trump's rule in this country. It's also a reminder of our boundaries. So, and that is going to be intensified by happening at the time of the winter solstice. The other thing about December the 14th was that it came smack in the middle of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is an eight-day Jewish celebration. And the thing is that because most Jewish holidays tend to be anchored to a full moon or a new moon, and this comes towards the end of the year, just before the winter solstice, it's actually, it can be seen as a coming out of the darkness for the light. See, we can see light coming out of the darkness. So again, I can imagine people interpreting that as seeing, you know, the darkness of the previous president's reign coming to an end and a period of light coming about. Also, we have the Saturnalia, which was the most popular of the Roman festivals, and that started yesterday on the 17th of December and continues on to the 23rd of December. So I can see the Saturnalia as further intensifying the energies of Saturn in the Great Conjunction. So apart from the 14th of December being a particularly important date for the presidency, there were all these celestial and religious events coming together. And I just thought it'd be good. Like, I came across one article that talked about the eclipse, the comets, and the meteor shower, but there are all these other things as well that are happening. So I wanted to kind of bring it all together, put it all in the one place, and people can come to their own conclusions. And I'm sure people could look at all the events that are currently happening and come to very different conclusions. You know, I've come to my conclusions and I put them across in the blog, but again, everyone should make up their own minds. So again, it was a very interesting day for me. So I just wanted to document it. So that was it.
It's good that you put everything together. I have friends and students who are much more knowledgeable about these things than I am and much more into it than I am. And they were giving me bits and pieces of what you pulled together and allowed for a greater picture to come forth. So thank you for that.
I think it's really important to collect disparate bits of information, put them all together, because the more complete the picture you have, the more valid the conclusions you come up with. But for me, it was pretty obvious that, you know, we had to have Biden being announced as the president, and everything seemed to fit in. So that was the conclusion that I came to. And I actually uploaded this before Biden was announced. Anyway, I think it was pretty well a foregone conclusion anyway.
Jean-Louis, do you have anything you'd like to add or ask Tony?
Ask no, but say yes. I really like very much what you are sharing on Facebook. You are sharing a lot, and everything is really interesting. I am frustrated to not be able to read everything, but thank you for your post on Facebook.
Thank you very much. I basically upload things which I think are interesting and important, and it's nice when people see them as important. So thank you so much for your kind words. I really appreciate them, and thank you for the work that you do.
Yeah, I like very much to read everything you post because it's so close to what I am thinking that perfect. Thank you. And I hope to everyone to do the same. Read your post.
Thank you.
Apollonius, do you have anything you'd like to add or ask Tony?
Yes, I've been very interested myself also in this great conjunction that's coming up. And, you know, it seems so much like, in my mind, at least Jupiter and Saturn both have aspects of authority about them. But they're, you know, in some ways also complementary. And I wonder, Tony, are you thinking about any sorts of planetary rituals to do on the solstice that would be relating to Jupiter and Saturn?
That's actually a really good question. I normally have a series of rituals that I do on the solstices and the equinoxes. I work with Eon, otherwise known as Zurvan Akarana, on those four dates. They're the four turning points of the year. But I really think that I should be doing invocations to Kronos and Zeus on the same day as well, because their influences are going to be very, very powerful. I think there are going to be interesting things happening over the next few days, even if not externally, then internally. I can see spiritual progress being accelerated, especially if you have already developed a relationship with Zeus and Kronos.
Right. Right. I agree with that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, Tony?
Which bits?
The part about Zeus and Kronos and the importance of establishing or reaffirming a relationship during this time.
I believe in establishing a relationship with all the gods that you work with. I have a number of gods. I work with the planetary gods on a daily basis. There are a few others that I work with as well that are non-planetary gods. And what I try to do myself and what I encourage everyone to do is to develop a degree of closeness. And it's funny you should actually be asking, because you're asking Apollonius about the benefits of working with Pleithon's book. And the thing is that the more you work with Pleithon's system, the more adept you are at it and the better it works for you. And it's the same sort of thing when you work with the various gods. The more you work with them, the closer the relationship you develop. So I work with Zeus every Thursday. I work with Kronos every Saturday. I do short invocations to them. They're invocations taken from the PGM, you know, the Greek magical papyri. So I'll just tack those invocations on to the invocation that I do for Eon on Monday. And of course, Monday being the day of Selene, I have to do an invocation to Selene. So I've got like a lot of rituals to do first thing in the morning, but it'll be worth it. I'm actually going to be visiting someone for their birthday, and they're going to have a telescope set up in the backyard. It's only going to be a small group of us, and
So
we're going to be looking up at the planets through a telescope. I was looking at them the other night. They're very close now, but on the day of the solstice, they're going to be less than the diameter of the moon apart. That is, looking at them, that's how close they're going to appear. So they're going to be extremely close. And there are people who've suggested that the Star of Bethlehem that announced the birth of Jesus was actually, yeah, they were suggesting it might have been a triple conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Venus. So the three came together and was extremely bright. I mean, that's just one theory that's been put forward. Other people have thought it was a comet or something like that. But so there are people now who are referring to this particular conjunction as a Christmas star, but obviously it's not a Christmas star because it's happening on the solstice, so it's more a solstice star. But, you know, we live in a Christian country, so they're going to call it a Christmas star.
Well, thank you so very much, and we're approaching the end of our conversation for today. I'd like everyone to have some time to share their contact information, so we'll start with Tony. And we'll take it from there.
The easiest way to get in contact with me is through Facebook. I have a personal page, and I also have an author page. And I have a blog, which I write for fairly regularly, on Pathios. It's called Holistic Spirituality.
And you also have a show called Living Eleni's Moss, which is on the last fourth Sunday of the month.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, we do that together. So that's always fun. I look forward to doing those shows with you.
Same here. Thank you very much, Apollonius. How can people get in contact with you?
The best way to get in contact with me is through my websites. There's two of them. One is opsopaeus.com, and that's spelled opsopaeus.com, and the other is wisdomofhypatia.com, and it's Wisdom of Hypatia is all one word, and Hypatia is Hypatia. And those are the best ways.
Thank you so very much. And Jean-Louis?
My website, this is devyasi.org, devyasi.org, and you can reach me on Facebook, too.
Okay, thank you very much to everybody. We have time for everyone to share a thought that they'd like to leave the audience with, so we'll start with Jean-Louis on that one.
Yep.
Okay. We have enough time for everyone to share a thought that they'd like the audience to take with them during this transitional time. So would you like to start that?
We need a lot of people of goodwill, and I wish that we have a lot of people of goodwill for the years and months coming.
Thank you very much, Apollonius.
Well, I have a very similar thought. I mean, life is hard, so we should be kind to one another, and especially in these current pandemic situations, all the more so. And beyond that, I would just encourage everyone to stay in contact with the gods by whatever means they know.
Thank you so very much. And Tony?
I really can't add anything to what Apollonius and Jean-Louis have said, but basically I totally agree that it's important to be kind, compassionate, empathic in these difficult times, and also stay on your spiritual path. Keep working towards the divine.
Powerfully said. Thanks to all of you. Happy holidays to you and to yours, and a very blessed new year. Thank you for all you've contributed to my life and to our audience's life in the past year, and I'm looking forward to our journey for the year ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And to all who've listened, whether you're listening live or later on demand, from all of us to all of you, happy holidays, happy new year, joyous journeys, and amazing adventures. We're going to end with Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin.